What's behind last month's Fed rate cut, and possibly will we get hints of what's ahead? From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. This week, the Federal Reserve is pulling back the curtain a little on its decision last month to lower interest rates. Yesterday, the Fed released the minutes from its July meeting. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live here in Washington. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning.
So the decision to cut rate cuts was not unanimous. Who disagreed and why?
There were two dissents last month from Esther George, the president of the Kansas City Fed, and Eric Rosengren, head of the Boston Fed. They wanted to keep interest rates the same. They said the economy was still strong and lower rates weren't necessary. They pointed out that the unemployment rate is near 50-year lows, and they said inflation appeared likely to rise toward the Fed's target of 2%.
And what did the minutes say about what the Fed might do next, whether they'll continue to lower interest rates?
Well, they called last month's decrease a mid-cycle adjustment and not the start of a long string of interest rate cuts. They said what they always say, that what they do next depends on the data, that is unemployment, inflation, manufacturing. But they also mentioned uncertainty caused by the trade wars and what they called disappointing economic growth, especially in China and the Eurozone. Fed officials will shed more light on their thinking this week at a conference kicking off tonight in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. As Nancy mentioned, Fed officials are meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the annual meeting of central bankers and finance officials from all over the world. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell will address the gathering on Friday, and Wall Street will be watching for signs of another rate cut as some economic indicators point to a slowdown. Marketplace's Ben Bradford has this preview.
The Fed's annual Economic Policy Symposium is like the Academy Awards for a certain type of economist.
It's who's who for monetary policy.
Michigan University's Susan Collins says instead of awards, there are panels and presentations of research papers juxtaposed against beautiful, remote Jackson Hole.
You have all these suits wandering around and people in their hiking boots and stuff.
This year, the theme is challenges for monetary policy. The short-term challenge is plain. Does the economy need more stimulus?
Wall Street clearly wants signs that the Fed is going to cut further.
Maury Obstfeld at Berkeley says Jerome Powell's speech could give a hint.
That will foreshadow, you know, where the Fed's thinking is.
But Collins at Michigan says Jackson Hole is more about long-term global policy and theory rather than short-term decisions.
Sure, that's valuable. But there's some real underlying economic thinking that's going on.
As well as possibilities for hiking and kayaking in the afternoon. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down about 0.6%. That's about 44 points down. Germany's DAX is mostly flat, down just about 5 points. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down in the 1 to almost 0.3% range. Dow futures are down about 39 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is mostly flat at 1.590%. Earlier this month, U.S. immigration officials raided 7 chicken processing plants in Mississippi. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, arrested 680 mostly Latino workers believed to be undocumented. Many of the workers have since been released, but continue to face legal and financial consequences. For more on this, we turn to Nicole Novak of the University of Iowa College of Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how did you go about sorting out what are the financial consequences after one of these ICE raids?
Yeah, so my colleague William Lopez and I have spent the last year visiting 4 communities that had major worksite ICE raids in 2018. So we've done interviews with 60 people in communities affected by ICE raids. And in each of these cases, they're small towns far from the border, rural communities that depend a lot on agriculture and manufacturing.
These arrests can certainly put an emotional strain on families, but there are financial consequences as well. What do those look like?
Because these arrests take place at workplaces, in many, many cases, they're detaining and arresting someone who is the main wage earner for their family. But even if they're released from ICE detention, they're not permitted to work while their immigration case is in process. So many families who have someone arrested have a major loss of income.
And so how do some of those families adapt?
The most common thing is that families really rearrange their roles. So perhaps someone who previously had been staying home with children might take a job. We spoke to a grandmother who actually was a legal permanent resident and had been working, but after her daughter-in-law was detained and eventually deported, she quit working to care for her grandchildren. People might also look for informal sources of income, things like selling cakes or mowing lawns, babysitting. Little things that help bring in some money, but are still nowhere near the level of income they might have had before an ICE raid.
What happens to the businesses where these raids happen after ICE has come and gone?
Often they do struggle to find workers to take the jobs that have been left empty by arrested workers. In some of the communities that we've worked with or in other raids that have happened historically, the businesses have actually closed or changed ownership. So one example is in O'Neill, Nebraska, where a potato packaging plant that had been employing a lot of workers who were arrested actually ended up closing its packaging operations after the raid last August. The other thing that some people have said to us is that even legal permanent residents who might be Hispanic or Latino have had trouble finding work in the wake of these raids because there's concern from employers that they might not be authorized.
That was Nicole Novak of the University of Iowa College of Public Health. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read more about this story, including a firsthand account of life after the recent raids, on our website, marketplace.org. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.